السلام علیکم اسٹوڈینٹس، آپ کو منسٹری آف سائنس اینڈ ٹیکنالوجی پاکستان، ورچوئل یونیورسٹی اور مبشر ہمایوں کی طرف سے خوش آمدید. ٹوڈے وی آر گوئنگ ٹو اسٹارٹ ٹاکنگ اباؤٹ اے نیو ایریا ان فائنینشیل مینجمنٹ، اینڈ دیٹ از اے ویری امپورٹنٹ ایریا نون ایز رسک، اینڈ وی ول بی ٹاکنگ اباؤٹ رسک اینڈ ریٹرن ٹوگیدر. ناؤ بفور آئی موو ان ٹو دس new and very important area, let me go over the different areas that we have covered in the course so far. We began in this course by talking about the important definitions and terms of financial management. We began with the definition of value. We drew a distinction between the objectives of financial management, economics, and financial accounting. We began speaking about the importance of cash flows as opposed to net income. We went over the definitions of securities as opposed to real physical assets. We talked about the types of bonds and stocks that you can find in financial markets. We spoke about the difference between capital markets and money markets and real asset markets. We then went into a quick review of financial accounting, in which we covered the major financial statements, including the balance sheet, the P&L or income statement, and the cash flow statement. We went over the asset side and the liability side of the balance sheet. We went over the fundamental accounting equation, the rules for debit and credit, and we spoke about financial ratios, which are used to analyze financial statements. We then proceeded into the first major area of financial management, which is known as investment decisions and capital budgeting criteria. And we started talking about numerical calculations related to the interest rate, future value, and present value. And then we applied this concept and extended it to the present value and net present value equations. We spoke about other criteria, including the very important one known as internal rate of return, or IRR. And we spoke about a couple of others, including the payback period and the cost-benefit ratio. Most recently, then, we moved into the second major area of this course, and that is known as securities valuation, or the valuation of bonds and stocks. And here we extended the same concept of present value and used the same equation in simplified form to come up with approximate formulas for calculating the estimated intrinsic or fair price for bonds and for stocks. We drew a distinction between preferred stocks and common stocks, and we also mentioned that it's important to keep in mind the difference in the formulas depending on whether you are investing for a very short period of time or a limited life investment, as opposed to a perpetual or very long-term investment. So I would like you to please go over the material that has been covered so far, go over the slides in detail, as well as the relevant chapters in Brigham and Gepensky. So we are now about to start talking about the concept of risk and return. And we are moving into chapters 4 and 5 of Brigham and Gepensky, 8th edition. I'm going to spend a little bit of time and go into detail regarding this concept, because it's fundamental to our understanding of investment decisions. And it is also very important as a foundation to what we're going to talk about later in portfolio theory and the capital asset pricing model. So far in this course, we have been, to a certain extent, ignoring and neglecting the origins or the derivation of the required rate of return or the discount rate. I did mention that the discount rate is related to various other factors such as the interest rate and inflation. I also related the concept of the discount rate, or R, or I, as we have been calling it before. I have related this to the opportunity cost, and I've also related this to the required rate of return. We spoke about the minimum acceptable rate of return as being the risk-free rate of return in any country or any economy. And we mentioned that the Treasury bill rate of return is a benchmark for the minimum acceptable required rate of return for an investment in that country. But now we're going to talk in detail about risk and what risk means and how to calculate it and how to keep in mind both risk and return in comparing different investments. So firstly, let's talk about risk. What is risk? Risk is defined in various ways depending on who you're talking to. If you talk to the Chinese or our friends in the Far East, then their symbol for risk is a combination of danger and opportunity. And I think this sums up very well what risk means. Risk is a combination of both. Specifically, when we talk about risk in the context of investment or financial management, then we're talking about risk in terms of the uncertainty in the outcome of our investment. We're talking about the variability, or we're talking about the spread or the volatility that can take place in the final outcome of our investment. So when we talk about risk, then we're asking ourselves the question that if we invest, let's suppose 1,000 rupees in buying a share today, then what will be the price of this share 1 year from now? There are no guarantees about what the price will be after 1 year, and therefore there is an uncertainty or a risk that we are taking when we invest our money, because we do not know the final outcome. So the difference or the variation in the possible outcomes for a particular investment also represents the riskiness of a particular investment. We spoke earlier on about assets, and we mentioned that there are two broad categories, one known as real physical assets and the other known as financial assets. And in financial assets, we talked about direct claim securities such as stocks and bonds that are pieces of paper whose value is attached to the cash flows of the underlying assets of the company. Now, in this case, the risk that we're talking about can also be understood in terms of the uncertainty of the future cash flows of a business. Businesses make forecasts based on certain assumptions, and we talked about these forecasts when we spoke about the percent of sales method and the pro forma cash flow statements or the forecasted cash flow statements. So these forecasts are not 100% accurate, and there is an uncertainty or a variability in the possible outcome. The actual cash flows 1 year from now or 5 years from now may be very different from the ones that you have forecasted. And this too represents risk. When we talk about the risk in investing in direct claim securities or stocks and bonds, then in the next few lectures, we need to keep a distinction in mind. And that is the difference between risk for a single investment, which is known as stand-alone risk, as opposed to the market risk or the portfolio risk, which is the risk of a particular investment compared to or relative to the other investments that you have made. And in this case of portfolio risk, we are interested in the overall risk of the entire collection of investments that we have made as an individual or as a company. And so we will talk in more detail in the following lectures when we speak about portfolio theory, about the difference between standalone risk and portfolio risk. In the case of portfolio risk, we can make a further distinction between diversifiable risk, or risk that can be almost eliminated by diversifying the portfolio, as opposed to the market risk, which is basically the risk that arises from movements in the overall market or movements in the overall economy, which we may not be able to eliminate through diversification. So now let's talk about the causes of risk. What causes risk to take place? We mentioned earlier that one of the possible causes of risk is the possibility of losses, either losses stemming from operations or poor financial management. That is one kind of risk for a company, the possibility of losses. But the real question is, how do these losses arise? And one of the reasons for losses might be that the company has taken on too much debt or has taken on too many loans, and they cannot service the interest payments. There are broader reasons for risk, and one of them might be inflation or the general increase in prices that is not entirely predictable. And interest rates in the economy move depending on the inflation rate in the economy. Other sources of risk might be a stagflation or a downward spiral in the overall economy of a country. Risk can also arise because of political turmoil or political difficulties in a country. Risk can take place because of war. There are many, many reasons for risk. And ultimately, I think this is a subject of philosophy and not just financial management, because the final analysis of risk is that it's a game of fate or chance, and so one can never be 100% sure about what the consequence or the final result of an investment decision is going to be. Now, let's talk about how we can measure risk. it's important to be able to attach a number to risk so that we can rank different investments. And quite simply, risk is measured in terms of the standard deviation or the variance. And I think that most of you would be familiar with the definition of standard deviation or variance, because you would have learned that in probability and statistics. So in this particular lecture, we're going to revise the definitions quickly and then apply them to financial management and to investment decisions specifically. Now, we have to be careful before we jump into the calculation of standard deviation. We have to keep in mind that risk is still quite subjective, even after you have calculated a number based on the standard deviation. And the reason for that is, you have to keep in your mind, what kind of risk are you talking about? Are you talking about standalone risk for that particular investment by itself? Are you talking about the risk of that particular investment compared to all of the different investments that you have in your portfolio? Are you talking about diversifiable risk that you can eliminate? Or are you talking about market risk or systemic risk? And we will talk about these definitions in the course of this and the next few lectures. The other thing you have to keep in mind when you are calculating standard deviations is the time horizon over which you are measuring risk. Are you measuring and comparing risk of investments on a 1-year time horizon, or maybe on a 10-year time horizon? The answers might be different. The level of risk might change as you extend the time horizon or the duration of the investment from 1 year to, let's say, 10 years. Now, let's talk about the fundamental rule of risk and return. And that rule can be summed up in a very, very simple saying, which goes, no pain, no gain. In other words, if the investment does not provide an adequate rate of return, then the risk of investing in that investment is not worth undertaking. So the investors will not take on any additional market risk unless they also receive additional returns, and returns can be in the form of value, or we can measure returns in terms of a percentage rate of return. But the important point to remember is that the investors in the market will not be willing to take on extra risk. They will not be willing to invest in very, very risky investments unless they also expect to get extra returns. Now, this is common sense and quite logical when you think about it. The other principle that we need to keep in mind is that of diversification. And diversification is important because it can help us to reduce the level of risk. The simple way of remembering this principle is that don't put your eggs in one basket. And we mentioned this principle very early on in this course. And what this principle is saying is that if you invest in different kinds of investments and projects and securities, the chances are that they will not all be affected at the same time by the same bad news. In other words, if you are diversifying or investing in different kinds of securities or investments, that are not correlated to each other, then that is good, because in the event, let's say, of an increase in interest rates, then a diversified portfolio of investments would not move in one particular direction. In other words, not all of the investments would move in one specific direction. So maybe some of the investments in your portfolio will go up and some of them will go down. But the net effect will not be as great as it might have been, and the overall risk will not be as great as it could have been if you just invested in one particular investment. And we will talk in detail about this when we study portfolio theory in the following lectures. I want to give you a very, very practical kind of appreciation for looking at risk and return at the same time. Now, we can consider different kinds of situations in real life, and let's ask ourselves how high or low the risk level or the return level is, without going into numbers right now. So let's say if you are talking about climbing Mount K2, then I think most people would agree that when it comes to risk, this is quite a risky or a high-risk endeavor. Naturally, you've got the possibility of losing your life. Now, what are the returns for climbing Mount K2? Honestly, I don't know. The returns are unpredictable. It might be in the form of personal satisfaction. It might be that somebody will pay you a prize for climbing the mountain. But the returns are uncertain. We can talk about the returns for people who gamble on cricket matches. What are the risks? The risks are quite high because the outcome is quite unpredictable. Assuming that the gambler is not connected with the bookmaker and has not fixed the matches and knows what the decision will be, the outcome is unpredictable. What about the returns? Well, the returns can be quite high. If we speak about the oil drilling that goes on in Pakistan, let's say in the Badin block, then that is generally considered to be a high-risk venture. Why? Because the probability of actually finding oil under the ground is not certain. And certainly, there is no guarantee that you will be able to find enough oil under the ground. So it is a risky venture. What about the returns? Well, the returns are very, very high. We can talk about the shares market. And in the shares market, there is a speculator circle, oftentimes. And this speculator circle is that circle where investors are taking very, very short-term positions for a few minutes or a few hours, and they are buying and selling the same share within this period of a few hours. And this is generally considered to be a high-risk venture, and the returns can be quite uncertain. If you talk about investing in the shares of established large corporations and companies, or blue chip companies, then the level of risk is considered to be medium, and so are the level of returns that you can expect. If you talk about investing in a construction project, depending on the specific kind of project and how well you have made the feasibility, it might be a medium risk project with medium to high returns. If you invest in Government of Pakistan T-bills, than we mentioned before, that this is a minimum risk investment. And the returns are also quite minimal. Similarly, if you deposit your money in a PLS account in a bank, then again, your risks are quite small and the expected returns are also quite low. So this is just to give you an idea of how risk and return becomes important in our day-to-day life. Now, before we look at risk, let us take a look at the possible outcomes of a particular investment by analyzing the expected return. And we mentioned earlier that once we have an idea of the variation or the distribution or the spread in the possible outcomes, then from that we can measure the risk of a particular investment. So let us take a look at the possible outcome of investing in the share of a particular company. Now, what kind of an outcome are we talking about? Let's suppose that we are measuring the outcome in terms of the future price of this share after 1 year. Let's assume that the price of the share, the market price of the share, at present is 100 rupees. And let us assume that after 1 year, there can only be three possible outcomes. The first outcome is that of the case in which the stock market rises or booms. This is known as a bull market. In this particular case, let's assume that the stock price will rise to 140 rupees. And let us assume that the probability or the chances of this event taking place are 30% or 0.3. Now let's look at the second outcome. The second possible outcome might be that the stock market remains relatively normal or stable, or it doesn't move very much in either direction after 1 year. In that case, let's forecast the market price after 1 year to be 110 rupees. And let us assume that the chances of this event taking place are higher and that they are 40% or 0.4. Finally, let's take a look at the third possible outcome, and that is the possibility that the stock market index will fall. It might be because of a recession in the economy, and that is known as a bear market. And it's known as a bear market, by the way, because the bears are famous for pulling a person down. To bhaluon ki ye fitrat hai ki wo apne prey ko niche ki taraf khechte hain. To jab bhi stock market girti hai to usko bear market kehte hain. Similarly, jab stock market uthti hai to usko bull market is wajah se kaha jata hai, kyunki bulls jo hote hain ان کی فطرت یہ ہے کہ وہ اپنے سینگوں سے اپنے پرے کو اوپر کی طرف اچھالتے ہیں. In any case, let us assume that in the third event, in the case of a bear market, the future price of our share after 1 year will be 80 rupees. And let us also assume that the possibility of this third event taking place is 30% or 0.3. Now you will note that since we have to cover all possible outcomes in our model, if you add up the different probabilities of all the events, they will add up to 100% or if you add up the probabilities in decimal form, they will add up to 1.0. Now, we have calculated what the probable outcome of each of the three events is. We have also forecasted what the future price of the share will be after 1 year for each of these possible events. And we are in a position now to calculate the rate of return in each of the cases. So for the first case of a bull market, where the forecasted price of the share will be 140 rupees after 1 year, then the rate of return can be calculated simply from the formula future price minus the present price, all divided by the present price. In other words, the P sub 1 star minus P sub naught, all divided by P sub naught. For the first event, that rate of return comes to 140 rupees minus 100 rupees, all divided by 100 rupees, and that is equal to plus 40%. For the second event, in the case of a normal economy or a normal stock market, where the forecasted price will be 110 rupees after 1 year, the rate of return will equal 110 minus 100, all divided by 100, and that is equal to plus 10%. Finally, in the third event that is likely to happen, the forecasted price is 80 rupees, so the rate of return is equal to 80 rupees minus 100 rupees divided by 100 rupees, and that is equal to minus 20%. So now we have the three different possible outcomes or events. We know the probability of each event taking place, and we also know what our return on investment will be in each of the three cases. So what we need to find out is what the overall average or the mean rate of return will be for this particular investment. And this is known as the expected rate of return. And quite simply, we will use the very simple formula that all of you would have seen, which is that of the weighted average return. The formula for calculating the expected rate of return on a particular investment which has multiple outcomes can be calculated using the weighted average formula. So for the case of investments, the weighted average rate of return or the expected rate of return is equal to the sum of the products of the rate of returns and the probabilities for each of the possible outcomes. And that is equal to the sum of P sub I multiplied by R sub I. R sub I over here refers to the rate of return for that particular outcome, and P sub I refers to the probability of that outcome taking place. So for our particular example, then let us plug in the numbers for the formula. The expected rate of return, which is symbolized with R with pointed brackets on both sides, is equal to the sum of P sub I times R sub I. That is equal to P1 times R1 plus P2 times R2 plus P3 times R3. That is equal to 0.3 times 40% plus 0.4 times 10% plus 0.3 times minus 20%. And that adds up to plus 10%. So that is our answer for the expected rate of return for the investment in this particular share. Now, I think it's very important to be able to visualize whatever mathematics you are doing using formulas and equations. Because by visualizing the mathematics, the concepts will become a lot easier to understand and apply. We've just calculated the average, weighted average rate of return or the expected rate of return for our investment. And now I'd like you to look at how we can show the different rate of returns in the form of a probability distribution diagram or a frequency distribution diagram that's known as a histogram. If you take a look at this diagram, you will note that we have graphed the probability on the y-axis and the rate of return after 1 year on the x-axis. You will also note that the probability of each of the three different outcomes has been shown using vertical bars. Negative 20 on the chart refers to the rate of return in the case of the third outcome that we spoke about, which was the case of the bear market, where the stock market falls. The center bar refers to the event in which the market more or less stays where it is, and the vertical bar on the right-hand side refers to the outcome in which we assume that the stock market rises or that there is a bull market. And this chart shows you how the rate of return is plotted against the probability of that rate of return arising or the probability of that event taking place. Now, also note that in this diagram, the largest probability takes place at the value of the expected rate of return, which is 10%. The longest vertical bar is the one that is on top of the 10% rate of return figure. Also note, please, that if you connect the tops of each one of these vertical bars, then you form what we commonly call in probability a rough bell curve. It might not be a perfect standard normal bell curve, but it approximately looks like a bell curve, which derives its name because of its resemblance to the shape of a bell. تو expected rate of return یا weighted average rate of return کو calculate کرنے کے بعد risk یا standard deviation کو calculate کرنا کافی آسان ہے. We will simply use the statistical formula for calculating standard deviation, which is equal to the square root of the variance, which is equal to the square root of the rate of return minus the expected rate of return squared multiplied by the individual probability for each of the possible outcomes that are added together in summation form. So we will go in detail into the calculation of risk and standard deviation in the next lecture. For now, let me go over some of the concepts and formulas that we talked about in this particular lecture. We introduced the topic of risk and return, and we mentioned that risk can be seen in various different ways. Risk is the possibility of loss. It can also be interpreted as variability or uncertainty or volatility. It is basically the uncertainty of the outcomes from a particular investment decision as far as financial management is concerned. There is an element of risk which you cannot avoid. The risk that we spoke about for the case of shares and bonds arises from the risk associated with the forecasted cash flows of the company that has issued the stocks and bonds. So the uncertainty or risk that we talk about in financial management refers to the uncertainty attached to our forecasts of cash flows, prices, values, rate of returns. And it's important to keep in mind that risk can be calculated and interpreted in various ways, technically speaking, which we will talk about in greater detail in the following lectures when we speak about portfolio theory and capital asset pricing model. But for now, you should be aware that there's a difference between the risk attached to a single investment as opposed to the risk attached to that particular investment when it is part of a larger collection of investments or a portfolio of investments. When we talk about portfolio risk, then we have to make a distinction between diversifiable risk, which can be virtually eliminated, and market risk, which is difficult to eliminate and which arises because of broad movements in the economy and the market. We spoke about the fundamental principle in risk and return, which is that the investors in the market will refuse to take on a risky investment unless that investment is giving them additional or extra return. So this goes back to the principle of no risk without extra return. The other overarching principle in financial management under the area of risk is that of diversification. Diversification is basically a way of saying that one should not put all one's eggs in one basket. And what this is saying is that you should try to distribute your investments across different kinds of real assets and real projects, across different kinds of securities, different kinds of stocks and bonds, and ideally different kinds of countries. Why? So that by spreading this money across different investments, you will minimize the chances that each one of these investments will be affected in the same way. So if there is a recession, for example, in one particular country, and if you have invested in various different countries, then there is a greater chance that your overall return on the portfolio of investments will not suffer as much. So before we can talk about the numerical calculation of risk or standard deviation, we first need to calculate the expected return. And the expected return is very simple to calculate. It basically uses the weighted average formula, and the expected return then is equal to the sum of the individual probabilities of a particular event multiplied by the rate of return in the event that that outcome takes place. In other words, the expected rate of return is equal to the sum of P sub I multiplied by R sub I. What this gives us is the weighted average return for a particular investment after we consider all the various possible outcomes in the future. So we can also represent the distribution of future outcomes on a probability distribution diagram or a histogram. And we took a look at one example in which we represented the possible probabilities or outcomes, and we graphed them against the possible rate of returns that we expect in each case. And we mentioned that when we graph, the probability pattern generally follows the shape of a bell curve. And we will talk in more detail about this when we move into risk and calculation of standard deviation in the following lecture. So after calculating the expected rate of return or the weighted average rate of return for a particular investment, we are then in a position to calculate the standard deviation or risk for that particular investment. And that formula for risk that we will talk about first is simply the standard deviation formula, which is equal to the square root of the sum of the difference between the rate of return for a particular event minus the expected rate of return squared multiplied by the probability of that event taking place. And standard deviation is abbreviated with the Greek symbol sigma. We will talk more about this measure of standard deviation as a measure of risk, as well as some other measures like variance and beta in the following lectures. With this, I close our introductory lecture on risk and return. I request you to please go over chapter number 4 in Brigham and Gepensky, 8th edition. Thank you very much for your kind attention and patience. Aapko Virtual University, Ministry of Science and Technology, Pakistan, aur Mubashir Humayun ki taraf se bahut bahut shukriya. Khuda hafiz aur assalamu alaikum.